Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
It's time to take another look of football history by year in Football's History Rewind. And in this edition, we discuss the 1890 football season, which included the first time that Army and Navy played on a gridiron field, as well as more Hall of Fame legendary stories coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Football History Rewind. We are in part 13 of our series, and we are going to cover the season of 1890. We covered the beginning of the year, the first couple months of 1890, but this is the season and the rest of 1890 and that first Army-Navy game. But football was rapidly changing with each passing year of the 1800s, and rules makers were making busy trying to tweak the game in an almost trial-by-error type of methodology. Crafty players and captains were coming up with a new and very out-of-the-ordinary strategies on an almost regular basis that changed the landscape of the game as well. The turmoil of Harvard leaving the league and the rumors that pointed to Yale University being on the brink of leaving made the meetings of the association members very uncomfortable in an uneasy experience. Yale had been meeting secretly with Harvard, but not to form a dual league, but to only to continue scheduling football games between the two schools. This is how the young sport would enter the 1890s, a league that was very exciting, but which had its future very much in doubt. But the highlight of the 1890 season, well, was the negative news of football was very abundant in 1890, but there were also some positive aspects as well. Yale had a very good athlete on their team that year named W.W. Heffelfinger, or Pudge Heffelfinger. He was a giant among his fellow players, and he possessed agility and quickness to go with the size. Yale used his talents very well in 1890 as they developed a system that hedged upon Pudge's skills. The Blue positioned Heffelfinger as a lineman, and then at the snap would pull him off his normal blocking assignment and run him around an end to block out in front of the ball carrier. This is the first time in recorded football annals that the technique of pulling a guard was used. Heffelfinger was well known not only for his size, but he also was famous for always wearing a white bandage around his head to protect his ears. He was also known as the motivator to his teammates. This uncanny drive in Heffelfinger is very evident in some of the tactics he became famous for. There were many times where Heffelfinger would block an opponent and at the same time reach back and grab his teammate who had the ball and literally pull him through the hole. This is captured in the first photograph attached to the article that we have on pigskindispatch.com. If you look closely at the photograph, you can see it's at a Yale practice in 1890, and you find Pudge Heffelfinger with his arm outstretched to the right of a big tree in the middle of the picture. You can see him. He's literally pulling the teammate through the hole. The technique of blocking was not called that per se during this time of football, but was rather referred to as running interference. Remember, the offensive players could not use their hands or arms to run interference for the runner, only their bodies. This would be a difficult thing to do, and in reality, the offensive interference would use their hands and arms because it also was difficult for the two officials to see their illegal activity in the mass human flesh that occurred on the rush line. Now, another aspect of football in 1890 was the adoption of many players to start growing their hair real long. The players stated that they did this for protection during the games, but it was also almost a running joke because of how much protection hair 4 to 5 inches long could give. You know, it was more of a fashion statement by the men who played the game to show that they belonged to a special group. Those that were brave enough to play the rough game of football. The rest of the very conservative world looked on in disbelief as the men at this time, they kept their hair very short and neatly groomed. So maybe a little run of the hippies back in early football. Another football tradition that is carried on to this day started in 1890, and it was the first year that the West Point Academy played Annapolis Naval Academy in a competitive football game, which goes down into history as the original Army-Navy game. Our friends Dan and Andrew Newman of the Hello Old Sports podcast, they had a great segment on the whole history of the Army-Navy series. Make sure you check that out on sportshistorynetwork.com. Minnesota and Wisconsin universities also started traditions in football that year as they fielded a team and played each other. This could be the start of the Big Ten Conference minus the other nine teams. Well, maybe so. One of those other nine, Iowa, started a football program in 1890 also, but joined a league called the Western Intercollegiate Football Association. Other newcomers to football that year formed the Western League were Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska. This explosion of growth saw many graduates of the Eastern schools going west. It was reported that 45 former players of Yale and 35 from Princeton and 24 from Harvard actively moved west and south to teach the game to others around the country. Is there any wonder why the football fever swept the country so rapidly? Football was spreading quickly, and ingenious minds were working out new concepts and strategies to find advantages over opponents. The challenge was now really of those and the rules makers to keep up with the other aspects of the game. Please look back soon for part 14 of this series next week, and you'll see how these rules makers dealt with these issues right here on PigskinDispatch.com, your place for the good news about football and your portal to positive football history. We were able to give you this in-depth look from so long ago history by careful research, using someone who is contemporary to the period, and that's the best source. So a very special shout out to our main source of reference for information for this article. It's from Park H. Davis, the historian who wrote a book in 1911 called Football, the American Intercollegiate Game. We thank you for joining us today, and we hope that you'll join us each and every day for great football history on PigskinDispatch.com and on the SportsHistoryNetwork.com, where we are one of 24 different podcasters bringing you sports history all the time from many eras, many different sports. PigskinDispatch.com is dedicated to football, and we hope that you'll check us out. We have a great search box there on our homepage to search just about any term in football and give you much more reference information from our friends around the world that teach the game of football and have some great information for you of the gridiron. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that. Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.